this object. And we see this man, and he's showing the boy how to build stuff. He's using maybe a DeWalt drill there to work with wood and how to make things. And you see this neat connection between a young man and an older guy there. And clearly, this guy is in the process of becoming this child's stepfather. We get that from some of the images that is there. He's about to adopt this child, and no doubt by the expression on his face, the love that he has and the smiles that he has on his face, he looks forward to bringing him up and showing how to do the things and how to become a man and how to work in a shop and how to make sawdust and do all those kind of cool things that guys do. And in adoptive homes, there's often interesting dynamics that happen. And some of you know that firsthand because you are part of an adoptive home. Others know people who are parents that have adopted children. And we know for sure that there are some interesting things that happen when adoption takes place. Clearly, there are challenges that happen in that environment, but there are also some very wonderful opportunities as well in an adoptive kind of situation that we saw depicted in this video. There's a current television show on right now called This Is Us. Is anybody kind of watching the This Is Us on TV at all? Carl and I kind of got wrapped up in this quite a bit. It came out last year. This is the second season for it. And just to give you a quick background on it, modern day kids would be in their 30s are looking back on their lives. And Jack and Rebecca Pearson are the main characters. They have two children, and they are trying to adopt a third. And they're having difficulty doing this because the third child that they want to adopt is African American. And 30-some years ago, that was a lot more tricky to do than it is today. And they are struggling with this judge to make this decision that they want to bring this boy, this African American child, into their home, and they're Caucasian. And they have struggled with this to try to get the judge to see that this is the right thing to do. And so now they're on their second trip back in this process of trying to adopt this child. And I want you to see a clip that comes from this show.
This has been the longest 3 weeks of my life.
He's gonna see us today, babe. I can feel it. We got through to him.
Mr. and Mrs. Pearson, you've been moved to another judge.
What?
Judge Bradley recused himself from your case. I'll show you where you'll be.
Okay.
Recused? Is that a good or a bad thing?
And who do we have here?
We usually just call them 1, 2, and 3.
So well behaved.
Oh, give them time.
Okay. If you don't mind raising your right hand. Okay, one hand will do.
To affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
We do.
Do you wish to adopt this child as your legally adopted son?
We do.
We do.
And what name shall this child be known?
Randall Kenneth Pearson.
You have done the hard work. You've chosen to love. I, on the other hand, have the pleasure of signing it into law. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, my.
Okay.
Thank you.
I show you that because there's a neat line in there that the judge says. The original judge recused himself because he had some personal prejudices as far as an interracial family, and so he recuses himself, and this new judge sees it differently. But she makes the line in there right away. They were so surprised that this was going to go through and they get to adopt Randall. And she says, "You have done the hard work. You've chosen to love." And I thought that just is so fitting, because one of the good dynamics of an adoptive home is just exactly what that judge says. You have done the hard work. You've chosen to love. And that's what happens in an adoptive home situation. And that's what the Pearsons are going to do with Randall. And I think it's also what we have depicted in that original video of this man in the shop with his boy. He's chosen to do the hard work. He's chosen to love. And I think that is, that type of relationship is reflected in our Christmas story as well. You might be wondering what this has to do with Advent. Well, just as our first video there was another carpenter that was going through an adoption process as well. His name was Joseph, and he too had decided to adopt a child whose name is Jesus. He too became like our fathers here, Jesus' stepfather, and he is about to bring him up in the trade. And he's also going to bring up Jesus in a set of values that he has. And he's going to bring him into the man and shape him into the character that Jesus is going to have. And one of the obvious things I think about adoption is this choosing, this notion of choosing. It's not forced on us. That's one thing that's different about adoption than it is in natural childbirth. You know, Carl and I chose to have kids. We didn't choose who. It's who we got. We're stuck with those, but adoption's different. You choose who, and you choose to love. And that's what is happening here. Joseph exemplifies this choosing as an adoptive parent. And I wonder if that is what God is doing when Jesus was born. What's the story here? What's God's plan? And how is he going about all of this? Is choosing an important part of his plan? Was Joseph about having to make this choice based on faith? Is that part of this big picture? And I think it does. I think it models this overall choosing that we have to do in this walk of faith. I think choosing is an integral part of God's plan. It involves choosing. Joseph chooses to be Jesus' earthly father. And that's tricky, and we'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. But he clearly makes this choice to love this boy that would be his stepson and to help him become a man. And that's what dads do. That's what parents do and grandparents do. They either deliberately or not deliberately, they influence children and grandchildren with the character and values that they possess. And we mustn't ever forget that. There's a passage later in Jesus' ministry when he's an adult that comes from Matthew 13 I wanted to share with us here, because it drives home a pretty neat point. Jesus has just kind of finished doing some of the really cool miracles and signs that he's performing to the people to draw attention to his power. He's done this. He's also just completed teaching around the area, some of this profound teaching that we have recorded in the Bible. And then towards the end of chapter 13, Matthew writes, he came to his hometown and began to teach the people in their synagogue, so that they were astounded and said, where did this man get his wisdom and these deeds of power? Is not this the carpenter's son? Joseph, they know Joseph. Is not his mother called Mary? And are not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? Joseph and sons, carpentry. Right there, that's where I pulled that out. Are not all his sisters here with us? Where did this man get all this? And they took offense at him. But Jesus said to them, prophets are not without honor except in their own country and in their own house. And he did not do many deeds of power there because of their unbelief. These guys were struggling. You have this guy that comes in and shows these signs, and he's doing these things of healing and miracles and water to wine and dead people raising, and he's teaching with such authority, and they're struggling with this. Hey, isn't this Joe's boy? You know, the carpenter? You know, aren't these his brothers and sisters and his mom's Mary? You know, what's the deal? They're struggling with this. And part of that struggle I think we have today as well, because, you know, Jesus came and we show him in this cradle as a baby. He came fully human. He's fully human when he came, and he's also fully divine. And that's hard for us to get. And it was hard for people to understand that as well. We signify that here. We light these candles, the two big ones that we light every week. We do that as United Methodists because of that, because of our understanding of the nature of Christ. He came because he was fully human, one candle. And he came, he was fully God, fully divine. Two candles, one person, the dual nature of Christ. And that's hard to understand. It was hard to understand for those folks. And you know, that's hard for me to fully understand too. That's tricky to wrap my mind around that. You know, I'm just this. I'm fully human, and you know, my light's not burning half the time up here. I can't. It's hard to It's hard to put that all together. It's hard to wrap my mind around that. It's this wonderful mystery that through faith I'm going to accept that Christ came fully human and fully man. That's why we have these two candles. And the people were seeing Jesus as human. And that's tricky because I think, especially during this time of year, I want to see him as fully God because of what he comes to do. And he is. But I must also remember that he's fully human. And that was the conflict that was causing these people to struggle. They're having trouble resonating this thing that he's doing and saying and the fact that he is human. It's tricky. But he did. This mysterious thing, again, that I can't wrap my mind around, that Jesus, in all of his glory, in perfect communion and perfect community with the Father and the Holy Spirit, perfect community that would break that and come to us. And Paul says to us in his letter to the Philippians, he says this in chapter 2 in verse 5, he says, Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped or something to be held on to. He didn't see this as something that I had to hold on to. But instead, he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. He broke that perfect community of the Trinity for a time to come and be in human likeness. And being found in the appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Fully human, fully divine, but the fact that he came as a humble human in a human baby form, he needs a dad. He needed a dad, and God chose this dad. God chose Joseph to come and to bring this child up. He would be the one that would bring up Jesus. And what was it about Joseph that God saw? Why did he pick him? Why did he pick him? What was it about his character that he could use? What kinds of things would Joseph teach Jesus that would later influence his teaching as an adult? What character traits did Jesus pick up on from his dad? He would have. He was human. He would have learned a lot in that shop, in that wood shop that we have here. The author of our book talks a little bit about what it means during that time to be a carpenter. What did it mean for Joseph to be called a carpenter, and then later Jesus was a carpenter as well? And he says this, and I'll read directly from the book. It says, if Joseph was a carpenter, let's consider what tells us about him. The Greek word translated as carpenter is tekton. The word can mean a variety of things, but it seems most often to have meant someone who worked with wood. Because wood was in short supply in Galilee, the area where Jesus grew up and conducted most of his ministry, most houses were built of stone or mud brick. Though a tekton could be a house builder, there was a different word in Greek specifically for stonemasons, which was not what he was called here. Someone who worked with wood would have made the doors and the shutters for a house, but it's likely that much of the work of a tekton involved building furniture, chests, tables, along with farm implements like tools, yokes for oxen, or human yokes like we have set around here. Greeks also had another word for master builders called architectons, from where we get our word architect. An architecton was a master craftsman, usually had others working for him, but Joseph was described in Matthew not as an architecton, not as a master builder, but merely as a tekton. So he was a woodworker, and he built things. And, you know, I can relate with that a little bit, because as I was growing up through junior high and high school and college, I worked construction. So I get it a little bit. I understand a little bit about woodworking and house building and remodeling and those kinds of things. And you know, one of the things I learned is, you know, at the beginning stages, especially in house building, you know, the finessey stuff isn't near as important as when you get towards the end and when you start finishing and you're putting trim pieces up and you're installing cabinets. You know, you got to be a lot more precise there. But, you know, what I found, I think that it's planning is so important. Good measurement is so important. Skills, being able to work the tools and the materials, is so important to be a good tekton. And that's what Jesus would have learned underneath his stepfather Joseph, these attributes of working the materials, to have good planning, to have good measuring, But then finally, the one I don't have is patience. To take the time to make sure those things are all, to take the time that you measure correctly, to take the time that you have the right materials. That one I just don't have, because when it comes down to it, I'm ready to start throwing some air nails at the thing, and it just doesn't come out because I don't have that. Well, think about that. Those qualities of being a good tecton, to be able to do those things, how that would influence Christ's character, that he was patient, and he would have planned, and he would have thought through things, and he would have measured very well. Those qualities that Joseph would have instilled on Joseph would have affected the man that Jesus became. Adam Hamilton goes on and says, what does it tell us about God that he chose Joseph to serve as Jesus' earthly father and raise Jesus as his own son? Why didn't God choose a priest or an educated scribe or a lawyer or a physician or a businessman or even one of those architectons, you know, the master builders? Why didn't he pick one of those guys? Why did he pick the lower level Joseph, just a regular old carpenter or tecton? Why did he do it that way? Well, we don't know. We don't know, but I think that's just the way God works. He just picks average kinds of people, and I think what that does for me is it shows me that God is so accessible. Because if Christ would have been raised in royalty with someone of a higher class, you know, it'd be easy for me to just kind of step back and say, you know, he was here. He was raised here. How can I relate? But no, God chose someone from a lower socioeconomic status with both Joseph and Mary. Humble, poor, a level that I can relate with, and so can the rest of humanity. I think that's why he does that. He chose this humble man to be his earthly father, and his stepfather Joseph would influence Jesus into the man that he became. He would do the work of his stepfather Joseph, Jesus would. He'd build things like buckets and animal yokes that are out front here, and people yokes that are here, and tables and benches and those kinds of things. He would have done that as he was brought up in Joseph's home. And he would build them with care and with careful planning and with skill and with patience. That's what he would have learned. And then later in life, he would do another kind of work, and he would be working for his father. And that would be shaped by what he learned from his stepfather, Joseph. Later in his ministry, as he began his work in his 30s, one of the big things that Jesus had to deal with was organized church, the religion of the day. Boy, if you read through the Gospels and you read about what Jesus had to say about the religion of the day, most of it ain't good. It was just kind of messed up. And he needed to come up with a way of expressing this. What kind of metaphors could he use to bring truth about what real, true religion was supposed to be? He talks about this in Matthew 23 when he talks about the religion that the people were having to live under. In 23, in the very first verse, it says, Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. You know, he's talking about the preachers and the bishops and all the religious leaders of the day. That's who he's talking about. So you must obey them and do everything they tell you, but do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. That was the problem. He found that what the religious leaders were doing, they had all this extra stuff. What you can do on this day, what you can't do on this day, who you shouldn't hang out, what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat, what you should drink and when and how, and all this stuff. It was this burden on them. And it was so difficult. The religious leaders weren't doing it, but they're asking all the people to do it. It was tough, and he wants to correct this. And so how can I do this? And so he thinks about a yoke. He thinks about one of these things. He's probably, I'm not going to pick that up because it's going to pull that off. But he, in his shop, had been building these yokes, and so he'd get it a little bit. He'd understand the physics of this yoke. And he knew that Billy Bob's carpenter shop down the road didn't get it because his yokes were stupid. They didn't work. They were off balance. They were hard. But he understood what a good yoke would do and what that would mean. And so he said this regarding religion in the form of a yoke that he would have built in Joseph's shop. He says this in Matthew 11. Come to me, all who are weary and burdened. That law y'all got's just wearisome and it's burdensome. Come to me, all you are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He would have got that in old Joe's shop as he made these yokes. He would have understood this. He would have understood yokes that didn't work, yokes that were too burdensome. They didn't function right. He understood how a yoke would have been put together, and he could use this wonderful symbol as a way to show his truth about what real religion is. Saith the Lord. I don't know, Raleigh. My heart's pounding a little bit. But isn't God great? Isn't he awesome that he did this in the manner by which that he does this? That who'd have thought to do it this way? What a story. What a great thing. He uses these means, any means possible to accomplish his will, to convey his truth. He uses ordinary people to do the hard work. He uses you and me. A couple of things that Adam Hamilton says here, and he talks specifically to fathers. And boy, I think we need to hear this a lot. He says this, fathers play an enormous role in shaping our lives. For some of us, that role is powerful and beautiful. For others, it may have been difficult and painful, the role that fathers have played. He goes on to say, our relationship with our dad has something to do with how we picture God. And I think that's very true. I've heard that before several times. How we relate to our heavenly father is influenced by how we related with our earthly father. That puts some pressure on me. That puts some pressure on me as a dad. And I hope that puts pressure on all of y'all dads out there as well. It's important. How your kids, how your grandkids see you will influence how they see their father. That's for everybody as well, not just dads, but he does highlight dads here pretty significantly. So think about that as people, not just dads, but as moms and aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas. How are you shaping the children entrusted to your care as Joseph was entrusted with Christ's care? What image of God are you painting for them? Every mother, father, stepfather, stepmother, grandmother, grandpa, aunt and uncle has been asked to raise children of God, to show them a picture of God's love and mercy, and to teach them intentionally what it means to be God's children, Hamilton said. I can't imagine that responsibility for Joseph that he had was easy. I don't think it came natural, especially under his circumstances. And I don't think it's necessarily easy for us to do that. But we've chosen to do that. We've chosen to love the people in our care. And it takes work. But that is precisely what we are to do. We have been chosen to do the hard work, as that judge said, and to love and to show our Father to others. And to let them know that he has come. And he will come to you today. And he will return and come again. Let's pray.